Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
And here we go, playoff edition of the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast here on WGNradio.com as we broadcast live from the 7th floor, Studio B of the beautiful Trib Tower on the Magnificent Mile. Me, I'm Mike Jacobson. Man in front of me, Scott King. We talk about the Blackhawks each and every week. And for the second time now, our colleague and 2010 Stanley Cup champion, Brent Sopel, in the house once again.
Second time to join you guys.
I know. Free of charge, too.
You must have had fun the first time. I think you think we're a couple goofballs, but we know hockey, and you like coming on.
I kind of had to redeem myself. I wasn't very good, so I had to come back on again at least one more time to redeem myself.
The first time you were on, I told my wife is my favorite episode we've done. I thought you were great. It was awesome.
He came on right after you had your Players Tribune.
Yeah.
Article, which was phenomenal. So if you want to go back to the Blackhawks Crazy page on WGNradio.com, you can check that one out. But we want you to keep listening to this one first.
Yeah, this is playoff time.
It's the Sopel sequel.
We have been waiting for this. It is Thursday afternoon, approximately 12:34 right now that we are recording this. Blackhawks, Predators tonight. You can listen to the game right here on WGN Radio. Pregame with Judd Surratt at 6:30. Puck drops at 7. And then our man, Soaps, is going to actually be doing a postgame show following the game.
Wow, so I know that.
Some fan interaction.
Call in. Awesome. Let me know your thoughts.
So if you
yell at me, whatever it is.
So if you happen to be listening to this perhaps on your way to the game right now, or maybe during your lunch break, whatever it may be, just remember you can tune in and listen to Soaps later. This is a long day for you.
Sleep's overrated in the playoffs.
What time did you wake up today? Because you did NHL Network
radio? I had NHL. I did some Winnipeg stuff. So like I said, sleep when you're dead.
Especially during the playoffs.
Let's get back into player mode. Today, first day of the playoffs. What are you doing? Do you change your routine at all? Are you getting up earlier? Are you trying to stay on the same routine? Because I know some guys have superstitions about playoffs.
Yeah, we got a ton of superstitions, and you try and stick to it. And the problem is you're going to hear a ton of cliches through the playoffs because those cliches are true. You can only take care of it one game at a time. So you're going to go to the rink and do what you normally did on game one, game 55, game 82, whatever that routine is. Come to the rink, have your morning skate. I know a few guys probably stay in a hotel. A few guys go home. So sometimes the Hawks get hotel rooms for everybody. So I'm not exactly sure what they're doing this year, but you're going to stick to exactly what you did the first 82 games.
That's what I was going to say. It sounds just like the regular season where naps are huge. And we know how good the Hawks diet, how they have nutritionists and all that stuff kind of sounds the exact same for the playoffs.
Yeah, it's a new season. I always call it was the first 82 game was just a warm-up. So, you change your mindset a little bit. You got the ability of playing the same team, seven times, but everything else is exactly the same. You got to score more goals than the other person. You're at home. Game times obviously differ now because of TV, but tonight's a 7 o'clock game. So, your routine, everything should be very seamless.
Now, the last couple of games in the regular season, when you're leading into the playoffs, like the Blackhawks had, they already had clinched the number one seed. They knew that this was going to happen. It's got to be tough to just stay into that. Like, all right, well, let's just get to the playoffs. So that's why you could tell they kind of, I wouldn't say coast, but, they were just waiting to get past those last couple games.
Yeah, there's no question. And, I'll just use, the Washington Capitals for an example. Last year, they ran away, with the whole NHL. Literally, the last 2 months, they had nothing to play for.
Right.
So I had, I picked Pittsburgh to win the Stanley Cup last year. I knew they were going to beat Washington because there was so many games where they were just coasting. They had nothing behind them. So the good thing is that, Hawks played, literally almost right to the end. Yes, they coasted the last couple of games, which is fine. They let you rested, you almost got a little bit of rest. Taze, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, the key guys, Hossa, they all got, a game or two off, which is great. But if you start getting into five games, seven games, where you're just coasting through, that's where you get in trouble because it's not a light switch that you can just turn on and off.
You mentioned Pittsburgh, the Penguins, Brent, and I think it's an interesting comparison because they won with four or five rookies, and you see the Hawks will be playing four rookies. So Do you think last time it was interesting? You didn't like the move of signing Hayden right out of Yale and bringing him into the lineup. How do you think he's done? Do you think he got a few points playing in the top six, playing with Taves? He looked okay. Now he's dropped to the fourth line. How do you see those rookies factoring in the playoffs, especially Hayden?
Yeah, let's talk about him first. Like I said, I'd rather see these guys go to college. Now they brought Hayden in, toss him on the first line, expecting him to be that first line. Well, give him credit. He found out quickly he's not a top six forward right now. He may be down the line.
So you didn't like what you saw. I think he got like 3 points his first two games, but you think there's room for growth?
If you really wanted to get down into game tape and break it down, there is oodles and oodles of room for growth for him. So now you get into his new role, which is the fourth line, and basically it's be smart with the puck and be physical. Only reason John Hayden is, he's in that lineup right now is because he's been as physical as he has.
And they like the size of him, too, I imagine. You have a lot of guys that big that can play.
And he can skate. So, he's filled that role off. You take the fourth line with him on the left, Jordan Tutu on the right, and Kirill, in the middle. Obviously, you have a physical presence on both sides. And playoff time, you're gonna need that. So, they changed his role. He's bought into knowing that he has to be smart with the puck, that basically points aren't going to be there for him. Chip the puck in, and in the offensive going, just, get that momentum by finishing your checks everywhere you go.
For you, when you look at this, I guess the first series and the playoffs overall, I have two X factors, and that's I just asked you about the rookies. Great answer, obviously. And the other one for me is that fourth line that you just mentioned as well. And because I think people say Crawford, they want to compare the 2015 season. I think he had an elapse in performance, which I think Crawford's going to be fine. I think people have the third line as an X factor, but I think they've been great. I mean, Hossa's been great there. So I guess when you look at that fourth line, how do you see them panning out? Do you have enough experience with Tutu, and you got two rookies on the fourth line?
Well, you take a look at, and I say this every time, anybody who wins the Stanley Cup, it's nothing to do with their first line, and it's got nothing to do with their second line. So go 2010. Obviously Jonathan Toews won the MVP. Those first two lines did nothing for us. Yes, Patrick Kane scored that game winning goal, but what was the key line? Boland, Andrew Ladd, the third line.
Third
and fourth line is what wins you Stanley Cups. Because every team, every 16 teams here, East and West, have two great first lines. Now, do you have a third line depth where you can put up points? Now, obviously, we talked about Kruger, obviously, Marin Hossa, and Ryan Hartman. Obviously, Ryan Hartman had 19 goals. So that's a deep third line. Now, your fourth line, you got Hayden, very physical, big body. Jordan Tutu, who doesn't care. He'll have to fight anybody. He doesn't care if he's going to have to fight McLeod. He doesn't care what he has to do. He's going to play physical. Kiro has an ability to pop in and out, a penalty kill, or if there's an injury or something goes on, he can slide up that lineup. So I talk about depth. There's nobody else that, in the West that is deeper than the Chicago Blackhawks. We'll go back to Pittsburgh Penguins. Why did they win the Stanley Cup last year? The HB key line. That was their third line. Phil Kessel, Bonino, and Hanglin. That's where they beat everybody. That's where they beat the Washington Capitals. That's where they beat the San Jose Sharks. So this is, again, where I look for the third and fourth line to offensively, but obviously be really, really due diligence and be specific on the defensive role.
At the beginning of the season, it looked like the Hawks were really deep on D. And you could still argue they are. But in your eyes, do you think some of the guys that they were going to lean on and rely on underperformed a little during the regular season, and do you need more from them now?
Well, it doesn't matter how you performed during the year. You need more from everybody. You need more from Patrick Kane. You need more from Panarin. You need from Jonathan Toews. You need more from everybody, because this is a playoff time. It's a race to winning. Winning four games. So, let's go through that. Obviously, Duncan Keith played well. Brent Seabrook, Yarmolson was blocking shots, doing well. They brought in John Urduya, which is a very key role. And unfortunately, Brian Campbell was cut up and down, but he ended up close to 26 points. So, he's a plus player, won a Stanley Cup. So that's going to fill a role. We end up losing Michael Roosevelt, which you probably would have saw him or TVR our jump in there, but it looks like, Gosling's going to jump in there, a young kid, but, at the end of the day, everybody has to give more. This is playoff time. And if you don't give more, it's the will to win. Who's going to block that last shot? Who's going to dive? Who's going to take that big body check to make a play?
Blackhawks Crazy Podcast here, WGNRadio.com. The voice you just heard there, 2010 Stanley Cup champion Brent Sopel, WGN Radio colleague Scott King, the man in front of me, also WGNRadio.com. Read his stuff. The Chelsea blogger is also there every week. He writes good stuff. I know you'll have a post-game article up. You'll be at the game tonight. Soaps will be on the radio. Perhaps with Judd Surratt, haven't figured that out yet, but I know you're going to be on the post-game show, so make sure if you're going to the game tonight, tune into that afterwards. Anisimov, just in time, coming back for the playoffs. How big of a deal is that going to be for the Blackhawks?
Yeah, obviously, you know, he really solidifies that line with Panarin and Kane, on each of his left and right side, that he's a big body. You know, where are you going to find him? He's going to be in the corners, getting the puck, throwing it to those two guys, and going to the front net. Is he 100%? Absolutely not. But
that was going to be my follow-up. I mean, you think it takes two, maybe even the three games for him to get going?
Well, here's the thing.
I mean, you know better than anybody from
those 18 skaters, both for Nashville and for the Chicago Blackhawks, what percentage of those guys are 100%? I'd probably say 2%, maybe. Maybe 5, being nice. They just played 82 games.
Right, right.
So nobody's 100%. So, Anisimov, we know, isn't 100%. Do you think it takes him two or three games? Probably takes him, he'll get through the first little bit because you're running on adrenaline. It's that second and third game is where the difference is going to be. That first game, you can get through and play your 15 to 20 minutes on adrenaline. You haven't played for a period of time. The crowd's going crazy. Now, we're in playoff time. So it's more on game two and three that I want to see, how he reacts. How does his knee react after, a physical playoff game against Nashville? Does this end up going to overtime? We're in playoff time. You never know what can happen. So it'll be interesting to see come game, tomorrow after the game and going into game two and see how that knee reacts.
So you think he's got to shake off a little bit of rust, but on the same hand, is it good that he's had that much rest since March 14th? To kind of heal up and look at sometimes rest pays dividends for the Hawks.
Is that a double-edged sword?
There's definitely a double-edged sword now. Every player is different. How much rest is good for them? For me, a month would be terrible for me. I needed to be in there. I needed that my timing. I needed that, for when I was blocking shots, my eyesight, my peripheral vision. I needed all that stuff. Well, Asimov's obviously a lot more talented than I was. Do I think there might be some rust? Yeah. A month is a long time, and he didn't skate for a lot of that month too. So there's definitely going to be, be some rust out of there, but you got guys like Patrick Kane. Remember when he came back from his broken collarbone? It was like nothing. Like, seamless. At the end of the day, to me, it was gross.
It
was gross.
I mean, just from that, you could argue that injury won the cup because look who they were able to go out and get. Vermette, who was huge against Anaheim.
100%.
And good in the final. Yeah. And Desjardins, to me, in 2015, was the unsung hero of the 2015 team. Every time you watch him, he's just winning battles. He was so great as an ambassador on a checking line and shutting down other teams' top offenses.
Yeah, 100%. Patrick Kane doesn't break his collarbone, we don't get Vermette. You maybe got Desjardins still, but Vermette scored some big goals in playoffs. Had some big face-offs. Yeah. He had his struggles, but he stepped up when the time was. He did a great job. So it's interesting how things fall into place with injuries and the salary cap. And at the end of the day, you got to find a way to stay as healthy as you possibly can through the playoffs.
And when you have Stan Bowman pulling the strings, that always helps too.
Yeah,
he does help. He
always
makes great
tends
moves.
To find the guy. We've talked about the X Factor on the Blackhawks. X Factor for the Nashville Predators. For people that aren't as familiar, now we Blackhawks fans have been able to see them more than a lot of teams that they could have potentially met in the playoffs. I've only lost once in the regular season to the Predators, but for people that are just tuning in now, because we do get those people that are just watching the playoffs. What do they need to know about?
Don't hurt your ankles. Jump on the bandwagon. Don't sprain it.
What do they need to know about the Preds? Who's the X Factor?
You know what? Nashville Predators are a different team. They score a lot of goals. They scored 240 goals. Chicago Blackhawks scored 244. They had 12 guys score over 10 goals. Blackhawks only had 7. So, that's their whole forward line right there, scored 10 or more goals, which is a ton of goals. Their defense put up 150 points. So this is a team that can put up points quickly. So the X factor to me overall is the Chicago Blackhawks defense. You have to know who's out there. You got P.K. Subban. You got Ryan Ellis. You got Roman Yossi, who I think is one of the best defensemen in the NHL. Ekblom, they got the top four D-men, put up 150 points. They're gone. Yeah. They're in the offense every single time. They're going nonstop. It's a four-man attack at all times. So, and when I talk about X-Factor, Chicago Blackhawks have to have the mindset of defense first. You play good defense, put the puck. If you're going for a change, you need to put your puck in a good spot away from Pekka Rinne, make the defense go all the way back to the corner because Ryan Ellis and P.K. Subban, they can skate back, get back, and fire the puck up quick. So it's very good puck placement. Be really, really smart of where you go. You know, their first line, obviously, Philip Forsberg, had 31 goals. At one point in time, he had back-to-back hat tricks. You know, he had six goals in two games. He ended up having, I think, Andy score. I think he went on a run. He had eight goals in three games. So, Arvidsson is the other guy, scored 31 goals. That top line, obviously, it's just like anybody else. Their top two lines are dangerous, but they have a lot of scoring depth through, those 12 forwards and their first six defensemen.
For me, I think as much of an X factor as the Predators' defense can be, I think when you have guys not only joining the rush, those guys lead the rush. Those guys always have the puck. And when you're doing that, when you have those guys coming in, I think there's going to be opportunities for turnovers.
Yeah, but you're 100%. And that's where I talk about defense. You have to have that defense first mentality. You're going to turn the puck over. You're going to catch Roman Yossi in the play. You're going to catch P.K. Subban in the play if you have that defense first. If there's a 50-50 puck, you think defensive-minded. Why? Because you're going to get it back. Now, if you play good defense, you're going to catch them on turnovers, odd man rushes, two-on-ones, three-on-twos, if you play that way, defense-first-minded. But if you switch your mindset and you want to play offensive-minded first, that's what's going to bite you in the backside. And when those opportunities are there, you're not going to get them because you're going to be half a step on the wrong side of that guy or of that puck. So you really have to think of defensive-minded at all times.
Yeah, and I think Pekka Rinne, too, is you don't know what you're getting with him, especially in the playoffs. It's a guy who struggles, as you know, Brent, a guy who struggled in the playoffs. He had a good ending to this season. He really started to peak and come along, get some consistency finally. But you look at him, he has a .912 save percentage and a 2.51 goals against average in the playoffs for his career.
Yeah, these four goalies are interesting. They almost have identical everything across the board, both backup, backup goalies. There's a lot of talk that this is the most deep goaltending in any of these series.
Really?
So you got, obviously, we all know Scott Darling, what he did. Obviously, his goals against was, 2.38, save percentage at .924. Well, Saros, their backup goalie, had better goals against and save percentage than Scott Darling.
Huh.
Yeah, so,
wow.
You talk about...
Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that.
No, exactly. So, that could be another X factor. You go back to 15, what happened? Who jumped in on that? Scott Darling jumped in and played well. Now that Peter Laviolette has a legitimate backup, well, now does Pekka Rinne struggle? If he does, what do you do? Now he's got somebody he can go to, exactly how Joel Quenneville did in 2015 in that first round. Maybe they go... They pull Pekka Rinne and put Saros in and see what they can do.
What about Crawford Darling? Same situation. Cue to pull the trigger on, all right, let's make a change here. Let's say he really struggles in game one.
Again, you're going to have to it's tough to say, if it's one game or one period, you have to see what those goals are. Are they terrible goals? Are they really bad? Is he out of position? Is he not squared up to the puck? Where is he leaving those rebounds? So, if you go down and break down those in 2015, those goals that Corey Crawford let in that allowed him to get pulled, if he has a similar repeat of that, I don't think it's going to take Joel Quenneville long. Why? Because he has somebody in the bullpen, you can give the lefty and bring bring in Scott Darling in with full confidence of ownership down to management, down to everybody, sure. Chicago Blackhawks fans, to every player on that ice.
Because he's done it before. You saw him do it. He saved a series. Was a big factor in that first series and kind of that cup run overall as a whole. But I don't see that happening. I think Crawford's really going to be not just steady, but I think he's really going to play well. I think he's going to be great position. I think he's become a competitor. Maybe the way he usually gets going throughout the playoffs, I think you might see that early.
Here's the thing with Corey Crawford. I've defended him. He's an awesome guy. Love the guy to death. He's on the verge of a Hall of Fame. He was a part of the 2010. He's won two Stanley Cups as number one goalie. There's nobody else in the NHL. Him and Quick were the only two goalies that have won two cups this year that played. He goes and wins this year. He's been a part of four cups. He's Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I would.
He's got two Jennings,
I gotta ask you this, though. I mean, it's been like this basically the whole time he's been here in Chicago, from a Nationals perspective and even locally. Why does he not get as much respect as he deserves?
Well, everybody wants the look pretty Patrick Kane. You know, you take a look at – people know Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Marian Hossa. After that, who do they know? Nobody. It's that generation that we live in. You know, let's go to the NBA. They know LeBron. They know Steph Curry. They know Westbrook. It's all about the flash. So, you know, go back to goaltending. You know, Carey Price, very calm, cool, collective. Braden Holtby in Washington, very calm. Corey Crawford isn't that goalie. But what does he do? He stops pucks. His job is – there's times he gets turned around and he stops it with his backside. I don't care. He stops it. Yeah. You know, the same thing was, you know, with myself. I was, you know, always see the slowest every year. I was never pretty. People didn't like me. But I did what I had to do to get the job done. And Corey Crawford to me is the exact same way. You know, he isn't technically sound. He isn't that pretty, you know, looking goaltender that you look at. Everybody wants to follow, and those kids want, you know, that goaltender on their poster in their bedroom. But his job is to stop pucks, and what does he do? He stops pucks. Now, if you break it down even further, the opportunities that he's got to save and some of the saves that he makes. I remember last year, you know, he had three saves in Montreal within 8 seconds were completely highlight reel. But that's what Corey Crawford does. So if he lets a soft win in, everybody's like, see, I told you he should be, you know, how many times is people calling and trade Corey Crawford? Mm-hmm. But he's on the verge. He's on the verge of being a Hall of Famer.
All right, I got to ask you. We only got a few minutes here. A few rapid fire questions. Toughest place you ever played in the NHL in the playoffs? Toughest stadium.
I have to say Philadelphia.
That's the toughest.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, those fans. You know, obviously everybody knows about Philadelphia. Not the nicest fans, and pretty rude. You know, so on and so forth. But that, you know, that building is. It's not the easiest building. It's not the nicest building. So, for me, that was tough. With a very close second would be, you know, Boston.
I remember in the news here, some guy took his kid to I think Game 6 in 2010, and he got his nose broke in front of his kid by a Philly fan.
Well, you know, I cannot top that. You know, I don't mean to top your story. I had a buddy of mine who was a cardiologist.
Top
he was 55 years old. He was, you know, he watched a guy get his head smashed. Ugh. You know, into – this was Game 3. So I said, hey, do you want to come back to Game 6? He's like, you couldn't pay me to go back there.
Man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I would say that they would be the toughest place.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds very tough.
I was married at that point in time, and my kids were there, and they told the family, and don't wear, you know, Hawks jerseys. You know, they had to bring XC security guards because they really didn't know what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's crazy. Well,
best home crowd. And you don't have to say the Blackhawks. You don't have to. You've been in a lot of teams. But what the best crowd to play behind, not even just playoff time, but – more specifically,
You know, it's you have to go with the Madhouse Madison. There's nothing more exhilarating than that national anthem. You know, you go to San Jose, you play in the Shark Tank. That used to be a very tough building, great, really loud. You know, in Vancouver, we had some unbelievable teams. We were probably a goaltender short of and maybe a coach of winning the Stanley Cup. We're rolling. We're just steamrolling teams after teams. Vancouver is great. Obviously, playoffs anywhere you go is great, but when you can't hear yourself think, you and that crowd is just that electric to start the game. You know, it's tough to get ready, you know, get going for those first couple shifts, but that anthem puts you in a mindset that it's showtime.
One more for me, and then we actually have Brittany Tulis, who's been very nice to come in today.
Helping us a lot today.
She's helping us out. Took some video today. She wants to ask you a question. You have to be honest with me. In 2010, did you know that puck went in?
No.
If
you take a look, I was the last person to leave the bench.
Really?
I did not leave
You have that distinction?
I did not leave that bench because I'm like, there's no flipping way that I am leaving this bench and you're telling me that puck didn't go in. So I literally kind of stepped off the bench and kind of literally almost walked a couple feet, looking back at the bench, looking back at the coaches to get the confirmation from the video coach at that point in time before I was going to get excited.
So you waited for the video coach to say, yeah, that was it. You didn't buy – it seems like a lot of guys bought into Kane's celebration because he was going so hard.
Well, I didn't buy in the fact, like, I knew this was my only one shot. You know, I knew this is my my one time. You know, if I don't win now, I'm never going to win. So, I couldn't get my hopes up. I didn't want to get my hopes up and buy into that until I know exactly it was time to sell.
Brittany, you get the honor of asking Brent Sopel the final question of the podcast. Wow.
All right. Well, this kind of piggybacks. So since you're talking about home crowds, what do you think of Nashville's ticket policy on not allowing Chicago fans or people with Illinois IDs to buy tickets? Is that for the team so they have a lot of, like, home support? Or
you know, it's I was talking with some people earlier about this. I think it plays in the favor of first off, who doesn't want to go to Nash Vegas? That's what we call it.
Nashville's one of my favorite cities.
That's it. You know, you party like a rock star. The women there are unbelievable. It's awesome. So, but I here it comes down to is that the Blackhawks are in Nashville's head, and you're in their head of the ownership. You're in their own management. If they're going to try that hard to keep Blackhawks fans out, Then as media, you're asking, you know, Roman Yossi and Fisher all about the ticket policy. You know what? These are questions that you don't want to have these players worrying about.
It becomes a distraction.
Exactly. Yeah. So being in their head, even same thing in Tampa when, you know, in 15 we'd beat Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. Tampa Bay tried to do the same thing. Chicago Blackhawks fans obviously travel great.
Oh, they roll deep.
When you win three Stanley Cups in 7 years, you're going to have an amazing – being original six, you're going to have amazing fans no matter where you go. So I think that they're in your head. It only helps the Chicago Blackhawks if, you know, Nashville Predators do it, whoever that is, you know, St. Louis or Minnesota in the next round. They're in their head. And – just one less thing that, as a player, you want to be worrying about. So I think it's for us, it's a great thing.
All right, predictions around the room really quick. Scott King.
Hawks in six.
Hawks
first round.
Six. Brent Sopel.
Yeah, I got Hawks in six.
I have Hawks in five.
Ooh.
Brittany Tulis.
I have Hawks in five.
Hawks in five. Look at that.
Interesting. Wow. Okay.
It's funny how that works.
Everybody agrees on the Hawks, so we will be back for next week for game two. Actually, we'll have a couple of games to be talking about by the time get on the air next week. So Scott King will be at the game. Make sure you check out his stuff at WGNRadio.com, the Chelsea blogger. Brent Sopel will be on the call for the post-game show following, hopefully, a Hawks win tonight against the Predators at the UC. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Jacobson Radio. He is at Scott King Media. He is at Brent_Sopel. Facebook.com/Blackhawks Crazy. You can find all of our stuff there. We'll talk to you next week.